You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? It's officially hump day. Across most of Wisconsin, gorgeous today. I know I've been trying to enjoy the sunshine from inside, looking out my window. Ooh, that looks beautiful out there. I hope you all get a chance to actually get outside and enjoy some of this beautiful fall weather. I had promised myself I was not going to talk about the Brewers after their absolutely devastating loss in game three of the wild card. But I find myself forced to. Jesse Winker, who played an absolutely terrible season for the Brewers and then got traded and ended up with the Mets and has now had a really good season, is a huge, enormous jerk. And he's also a sore winner. Every time he got up at when he was at bat during the playoffs, the fans made an adjustment to his last name, Winker, substituted a different vowel for the A and chanted that out a bunch. And he's a sore winner for a couple of reasons. In game three, he ended up basically being the insurance run after the heartbreaking three-run homer that was smacked to put the Mets ahead by a run. And then Winker, Wanker, Winker came in and also scored a run. And the guy took his helmet off and, like, slammed it on the ground. It was so ridiculous. Like, that's enough to dislike the guy. He tends to be a jerk. He chats a bunch. He was jawing at Willy Adames when he was on base in game three. Now, keep in mind, he's on base in game three, and they're ahead a run, and it's the ninth inning. Like, just shut your trap and enjoy the fact that you're likely going to win the wild card and go on. But no, he was jawing at Willy Adames, and he was like, hey, why don't you do something about it? Like, challenging Willy to a fight. Like, you are a huge, huge, huge jerk. And then yesterday, there's an article in the Journal Sentinel where Jesse Winker told a reporter, like, went on the record, was like, I really, really hate Milwaukee.
What?
Yes. Like, you are a professional athlete. You don't need to hate Milwaukee. By the way, we paid your salary with the tickets that we bought that season, right? Your overblown, overpaid butt that produced very little for the Brewers. Like, just such a bad sportsman. I think that just, it tarnishes the game. Anyways, I had to complain about that. With that, I will probably turn the page on the baseball season. I know I'm not all that interested in what's going on now in the baseball playoffs. But Jess, and folks, Jess, one of my team that helps me out with the Maggie Dawn Show, always happy to have her. If you call in,
you got to go through
hour,
me.
You got to go through Jess, part of the Maggie Dawn Show team, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We got a great show planned for you all today. I am so excited. We've got Attorney General Eric Holder that's going to join me after this first segment of the show. Again, one of the perks of the job, you sometimes get to talk to your personal and professional heroes. General Holder, certainly one of those. At 2:30, because it is Wednesday, it is Sounds Like Change with Emily's List on the Maggie Dawn Show. We've got Sarah Spain, their Director of Strategic Communications, joining us, talking about how the 1 million young women that live in Wisconsin will be the difference maker on November 5th. If you know a young woman, if you are a young woman, you're not going to want to miss this with Sarah Spain of Emily's List at 2:30. Top of the hour, of course, it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, except this time, definitely not millionaires. I have two ladies that are nuns on the bus. How cool is this? Two sisters that fight for social and economic justice. Nuns on the Bus are in a nationwide bus tour. They stopped in Milwaukee yesterday. We're going to talk to two of those very nuns that are on the bus. And at 3:30, we've got Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He was at Joe Biden's appearance yesterday. He just announced $4 million of county dollar investment in affordable housing. This is something that matters, not just in Milwaukee County, but statewide. We're going to be joined by the county executive. But I just wanted to share this with you, Jess, and everybody out there. I may not be talking about baseball, but one of the things that I love about the fall, even when the Brewers are out of the playoffs, is the fact that I've got this great dual citizenship, if you will. And by that, I mean, I was lucky enough to go to Marquette University on a scholarship for both my undergrad and my graduate degree in economics. And then I went to Madison for law school. So dual citizenship, I get to be like a Marquette basketball fan when MU plays UW in hoops. I wear both blue and gold and red and white. I look very uncoordinated because it's great.
I love it.
And as an undergrad, I didn't have the wonderful ritual at American universities of football in the fall, but I got to enjoy it as a law student at Madison. So I always get a kick out of this time of year because the Bucks are starting soon. You got all the college football. I love college hoops. I always look forward to that. Certainly excited to see what Marquette can do this year. But I can deal with the Brewers' loss because I've got other sporting ventures that I can look to and a lot of fan boxes that I get to check. But I would be remiss, of course, if I didn't talk a little bit about the fact that the Jets just fired their head coach as well. Got to talk a little NFL football. If you're not aware of what just went down, of course, everybody knows that Aaron Rodgers went to the Jets, came out first game last season, blew his ACL. He's now back. The Jets are 2-3, not doing very well. And they basically shocked the NFL when they fired their head coach. Now, here's what's actually going on here. Like, let me add it to the list of reasons I hate Aaron Rodgers. Apparently, this is the Haterade Festivus for me. I start with Jesse Winker Wanker, and I go to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers basically is calling the shots at the Jets, clearly. He's buddy-buddies with the offensive coordinator, who really should be the one that's getting fired because their offense isn't producing. But he's Aaron Rodgers' BFF. Aaron Rodgers basically plucked him from the Packers, took him to the Jets so they can their head coach. It's just yet another reason to hate Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what is wrong with this guy? He's a low accountability kind of guy. It's everybody's fault except Aaron Rodgers.
I think low accountability would actually be a vast improvement.
Yeah, because it implies some accountability.
Right.
Anyways, I will continue to talk a little sports with y'all because we all need a break from the politics of the day. But I would be remiss if I did not share with you Mitt Romney yesterday. Boy, I think it was yesterday or the day before, absolutely tore into Donald Trump and by extension, Eric Hovde and every other GOP MAGA cult lackey that continues to lie and potentially cost people's lives in the wake of Hurricane Helene and now the onslaught, the incoming terror that is Milton. Let's take a listen to what Mitt Romney had to say yesterday about Donald Trump's lies.
President Trump told us that the people in Springfield are eating dogs and cats, all right? I mean, you know, he likewise said that FEMA money, our emergency money, instead of helping the people that have been hit by the hurricane, is being used to help illegals. I mean, he just makes it up. And so he is able to spew enough disinformation that that the Chinese must be smiling. And now Kamala Harris also says things that are inaccurate. I mean, her pitch is that he's going to put in place Project 25. And he keeps saying, no, I'm not doing Project 25. And she keeps saying, yes, you are, and runs ads about Project 25. Well, I don't know who you believe in that regard, but I surely think that President Trump, when it comes to a holiday from the truth, he's taken the longest vacation.
So let me translate in Mitt Romney speak, right? He basically just said, I'm going to be voting for Kamala Harris. Like, that's mm-hmm. what that all sort of boils down to without him actually saying it. One of the things I talked to the attorney general about in our next segment is Project 2025. So you're not going to want to miss that. But I also wanted to address a question from yesterday. Kurt from Madison was very patient. Folks, at the Maggie Dawn Show, I get lots of help from lots of different producers. Sometimes I'm getting produced out of Madison, sometimes the AUK. So patience with us if we don't get your calls in. But Kurt from Madison wanted to know, hey, isn't Eric Hovde and isn't it Donald Trump, when they lie about FEMA running out of money and they say there's money getting diverted, why isn't that like yelling fire in a crowded theater? Why aren't they potentially liable civilly for that? Especially because it's acting real harm on Republicans and Democrats and independents alike in these regions where this misinformation has taken hold. Here's the trick, Kurt. It may seem like it's similar to yelling fire in a crowded theater, but it's not. Political speech is basically sacrosanct in the United States. And unlike false advertising, if you will, where there's a product and if the product doesn't do what you say it does in an ad, that can be grounds for a false advertising civil suit. And those happen frequently, most often brought amongst competitors in a particular industry. But when you engage in political speech, there just isn't a legal theory to proceed on. So even if you're speaking lies, you're saying things that aren't true, if it's political speech, it is sacrosanct. In other words, the First Amendment protects lies, especially when you're engaging in campaign political speech. But of course, that does not make it any less morally repugnant and a clear indicator of the unfitness of Eric Hovde and Donald Trump to be an elected official in this country. You don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to Mitt Romney. Folks, when we come back, we're going to listen to that interview with Attorney General Eric Holder. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Where are you?
Keep on running, because the winner don't quit on themselves.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm very excited to bring my next guest to the show. We've got former Attorney General Eric Holder. He served as the nation's chief law enforcement officer for 6 years, from 2009 to 2015 in the Obama administration. Since that time, he has dedicated his professional life, and I think probably a whole ton of his personal time as well, to protecting the rights of every American citizen to their franchise, to the vote, to fighting partisan gerrymandering that effectively robs us of this basic promise of one person and one vote. Welcome, Attorney General Holder. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hey, Maggie, it's great to talk to you, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
As am I, sir. Let me start with this. I ended my career as Milwaukee County's chief legal officer. When I took that role, I swore an oath to uphold our state and federal constitutions. And as part of that, it simply means that I do the job objectively and fairly, that I don't let that office be used for personal partisan purposes or that certain outcomes would be predetermined. I want to start there, sir. How important is the independence, the objectivity of the DOJ to a regular American?
Oh, it's everything. I mean, the rule of law is really the foundation for America. But in addition to that, at the Justice Department, we also have to have people at the state and local level as well who are committed to the rule of law, who will administer the law in a fair way, who will try to ensure at a most basic level that people have the ability to express themselves politically by being able to vote and not deal with voter suppression tactics, not deal with racial and partisan gerrymandering, not deal with unfair voter purges. There's a whole range of things that we have to deal with now in 21st century America, and it's vitally important that we have a Justice Department, a federal Justice Department, that is focused on those issues. But as well, we always have to remember, at the state and local level as well, we need to have fair-minded people.
Yes, so important, sir. This brings me to, of course, Project 2025, which, you know, there's many elements of Project 2025, but of course, one of them is this idea that the Department of Justice should be an arm of the White House, that it's okay to use the Department of Justice to try to accomplish political ends. When we look both at what Project 2025 promises in terms of decimating the independence of the Department of Justice, but also bringing the apparatus of the federal government not to do the job as good civil servant experts do objectively and fairly, but to basically make every single department within the federal government subject to the political whims of whomever occupies the Oval Office. Sir, again, to a regular Wisconsinite, a regular American, what sort of threat, based on your experience in federal government, does Project 2025 pose to everyday life here in the United States?
Well, I don't think people can underestimate the negative impact of Project 2025. It would essentially do away with the federal civil service as we know it, and essentially make people who are in those positions, in all kinds of positions, and especially in law enforcement positions, political appointees who would be beholden to a Trump administration, to a President Trump. And when you compound that with this Supreme Court decision, the immunity decision that gives him, or gives any president, but would give President Trump, if he were elected, the ability to direct the Justice Department to do a whole variety of things without any kind of criminal liability, you would really unleash Donald Trump, and it would have a negative impact on the average American in a whole range of ways, from health care, from criminal law enforcement, from voter protection, from the ability to for a woman to decide what she wants to do with her own body. All of these things would be impacted by a politicized civil service, and especially by a politicized United States Department of Justice. If for no other reason, people need to vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz just to ensure that Project 2025 does not become the law of the land.
Folks, that's former Attorney General Eric Holder. I want to ask you a follow-up question about that, because I helped Milwaukee County both organize and then defend our recount in 2020 that was requested by the Trump campaign. And it was, in fact, a Republican, a Trump-appointed judge in the federal courts that rejected all of the claims made by the Trump campaign after the 2020 election. In other words, rejected the big lie. Can voters rely on the federal courts as currently constituted to protect their vote, to respect the integrity of our elections, and to defend that?
Yeah, I think that we generally can. I fear that in a second Trump administration, however, you would have placed on the federal courts ideologues as opposed to good lawyers. But I think as presently constituted, Americans can have faith in our system, but also have faith in the Walz, Harris effort to make sure that their votes, in fact, are protected. We have, you know, tons of lawyers all around the country prepared to go into court to deal with whatever Republicans throw at us in terms of these false claims of, you know, ballot manipulation and rigging of the ballots, all that kind of stuff, and be as successful in 2024 as we were in 2020 when we had to win 60 cases in a variety of courts, federal courts as well as state courts. So I still think that we can rely on the courts, and people should not be, you know, intimidated. People should not be negatively impacted by the prospect of what the Republicans are going to try to do, what the courts might do. The first and foremost thing that we as American citizens have to do is to elect Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, and making sure that we have a plan to vote, and then making sure that we actually cast our ballots by November the 5th.
Folks, that's a former Attorney General Eric Holder. You can find out more about your vote, where to register if you're registered, the ward that you will vote in at myvote.wi.gov. We've got just a little bit under a minute left. Former Attorney General Holder, speaking to Wisconsin voters out there, what is your message, including your message to Republicans, independents, and swing voters as they consider who to cast their ballot for?
Well, I would hope that people in Wisconsin will vote for people who stand for democracy. We have really kind of unraveled a gerrymander that was put in place by Republicans in Wisconsin in 2011. It took almost over a decade to get it done. And this is the first time in almost 13, 14 years where Wisconsinites will have the ability to cast ballots for in a fair way. So I want people to vote, focus on, you know, the Harris and Walz ticket, but make sure that you're also voting up and down the ballot for state assembly and for state senate, for people who will stand for democracy.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General Eric Holder, and thank you for your work on behalf of Wisconsin voters. We'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Ain't nothing. We're a million strong young women here in the state of Wisconsin, and young women may make the difference this November. Folks, it is 2:30. It is Wednesday, and that means it sounds like change. The Maggie Dawn Show, always happy to welcome Emily's List joining me again every Wednesday at 2:30 to talk about change in this country. My special guest this episode is Sarah Spain, Director of Strategic Communications at Emily's List. She also worked as a fellow for Hillary for America. She worked on Ted Strickland's Senate campaign and at the Tennessee Democratic Party. She is a proud Buckeye, having graduated from Ohio State, where she studied business and public affairs. Welcome back, Sarah. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me back.
So I've heard that one in five voters, so full 20% of voters in battleground states, are young women. And by that metric, if we know the demography of Wisconsin, it means there's a million young women in Wisconsin that are eligible to vote. How important is the young women block this November?
It is essential this November, I would say. I mean, I am convinced that young women will decide and win this election up and down the ballot, and it's driven by abortion rights. So I think communicating with young women this election is essential for all candidates, making sure that these young women voters, this voting bloc, knows exactly where you stand, integral as we head into this election, because I do think that this voting bloc will be the difference maker in November.
It's a pretty exciting premise. Is there something standing in the way? Are there particular outreach efforts to young women voters in states like Wisconsin and Georgia and Nevada and Pennsylvania? How is the Harris campaign, or Emily's List for that matter, trying to reach this particular group of voters?
Yeah, Emily's List has a ton of work being done, millions of dollars in ads in women under 45, making sure that we're targeting this group, making sure they know exactly where Kamala Harris and candidates down ballot stand on reproductive rights in this moment. So we are reaching out, we are making sure these young voters know. But I mean, I would say we've seen a lot of success just between April 2024 and now, there's a 56-point swing in motivation for women under 45 to vote. So, I mean, that is unheard of at this point.
I'm sorry, did you say 56 points? In other words, a 56 percentage point increase in voter engagement for young women voters?
Yep, motivation to vote, which is truly unheard of. I mean, what would be great is 5%, 6% at this point. And we're seeing 56%. I mean, that is incredible. And that's for women under 45. And truly, it's because we're in this election cycle where it's the first election, presidential election, where Roe v. Wade was overturned, and we're seeing the impacts. And so these presidents are running on the possibility of protecting our rights versus taking it away.
Yeah, it's such a historic moment, not just because of the stakes of the election in terms of democracy and protecting the rule of law and the norms that we have used to govern our country for nearly 250 years, but specifically on this concept of reproductive freedom. I had never spent a minute, a second of my life as an American citizen where that right was not enshrined. Okay, 2 years, but that it was in 1979 for my entire cognizant life. And so I think, again, the clarion call, the distillation of the freedoms that are truly at issue, not just for reproductive rights, but the fact that that serves as a canary in the coal mine, as it were, for both basic privacy and civil rights for every group of Americans, that these indeed hang in the balance. It's not hyperbolic.
No.
When we look at the election and we step back and we think about the impact that young women voters, again, that being defined as women voters under the age of 45. When we step back and look at it, it seems to me that many Republican candidates have begun to flood the zone with what I call sort of the walk back of their opposition to reproductive freedoms. And you're seeing this sort of mealy-mouthed, well, it's left up to the states and states decide, which is itself a falsehood. There's been no vote in the state of Texas. There's been no vote in the state of Georgia. There's been no vote in the state of Wisconsin. So if young women, especially young women who may have conservative families, Republican families, are looking at this, their choices this November, and they're hearing all of this, well, we really actually want to preserve access to IVF. No, we don't really want a national abortion ban. We just think states should decide. How does Emily's List suggest voters investigate that sort of whitewashing, if you will, of what the Republican Party has stood steadfastly for the last 30 years, which is a national abortion ban?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two things I want to say to that. I think first, records. Like, the records show where Republicans versus Democrats stand on this issue. And so when we look back at records, say for Eric Hovde, and we look back for J.D. Vance, and we look back for Trump, we see that they are anti-abortion. They've been clear in their records. They've been clear on the record. And so now what we know is that they can read a poll. They know that women are going to decide this election on abortion. And so they're walking back and lying to voters, kind of this like thinly veiled attempt to lie to voters. And so I would say, first, try to look back at their records. I also want to kind of get into and dig into what leave it up to the states means when Trump says something like that. And I think recently, just this week, the Supreme Court decided on a case. It was the Texas case. They decided not to dig into that. And so Texas hospitals are not forced to use EMTALA emergency care and provide emergency abortions in cases where women need it. We also saw in Georgia, the Supreme Court walked back the decision to put pause the 6-week abortion ban. And so that went back into play as well. And so when Trump and Republicans are saying they want to leave it up to the states, that's what they mean. They don't mean we want to leave it up to the states to decide. They mean we want the states to make the abortion bans. And so it's a punt. It's nothing more than a punt. And so I would say, as you're hearing that, really think about what we've seen and what the states have been up to and what they're doing related to abortion.
Well, and there's this baseline reality. They don't mean let the states decide and conclude that reproductive freedom is a basic civil right. As you put it, Sarah, they mean leave it up to the states, and so the states can enact these draconian, sort of ridiculous from a biological standpoint, abortion bans, like 6 weeks. Women don't know they're pregnant at 6 weeks. That's just stupid. and the further point about that I hear you making as well, Sarah, is if you look at the cases coming out of both Texas and Georgia, those bans were challenged. You had trial courts looking very suspiciously at those bans because those bans kick in so early, right? The Texas case looking at the tension between the emergency medical treatment, basically EMTALA's guarantee that if someone comes to a hospital and the hospital receives a single dollar of federal funding, that they have to provide that life-saving emergency medical care. And in the case of women that we've seen in states like Georgia dying because they can't get that emergency medical care, there's a tension between the state law and this federal requirement for emergency life-saving medical care. The extension here is that they're also relying on these federal courts, especially in the Fifth Circuit and the Supreme Court, that are chocked full of ultra-conservative, right-wing extremists to then strike down these kinds of protections. In other words, to not step in to preserve reproductive freedoms, right? What was the status quo ante? But in order to enable these bans to go into effect and continue to deprive women of this fundamental right to control your body. And so it's extremely disingenuous, right? Like the very statement itself and the fact that they're basically relying on these stacked courts, either a state court or the federal courts in particular, especially in places like Texas and the Fifth Circuit, to defend these draconian bans. And again, Texas and Georgia, there hasn't been a vote about reproductive freedom. It's all a bunch of hooey. What is it in particular about Kamala Harris, aside from the fact that she is a woman, right, that makes her such a compelling candidate for young women?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things. I think, one, she has done this work throughout her career. And so this is work she cares about, and it shows when she speaks about it. The day that the Dobbs decision was leaked, she was at an Emily's List event and came out and did the famous quote, "How dare they take away our rights?" This is something she's been fighting for her full career. And I think that's very clear in the way she speaks about it. Two, I think she does a really incredible job of elevating spokespeople on the impacts of what this looks like and storytellers. We've seen that with Kate Cox out of Texas, who wasn't able to get abortion care in her state and had to travel out of state and had complications because of it. And so Kate Cox is someone who has consistently been elevated by the campaign. There are other storytellers as well out of Kentucky, and the list goes on and on. She's centered those folks in her campaign to make sure that women voters and young voters specifically know the impacts of this. And then third, and I think we can continue talking about this, but she has stepped into spaces where she is reaching voters, not just Democratic voters, but young women across the board. I think we saw that on Call Her Daddy. We saw that on The View this week, two very, very big opportunities to reach voters across the board on how she will fight for women, not just Democratic women. So I think those are my top three of the reasons she's really reached women voters and has been such a compelling candidate.
Yeah, her record on reproductive freedom is just unassailable, right? And even when we're talking about people who are candidates like Eric Hovde, yes, he doesn't have a voting record because he's lost every election he's tried to get ahead in. But you can go back and you can find his prior statements and his position on this issue. And it is unequivocally for pro-national abortion ban. One of the things that I think is so fascinating about this moment is the fact that this issue resonates with women across the political spectrum, and that is truly critical. is it having, are you seeing, do you anticipate this having a like sort of pulling potentially women that are otherwise maybe more inclined to vote for Republicans, potentially pulling them to the left in down ballot races as well?
I do. And I think that is the work of organizations like Emily's List, organizations that are making sure to communicate with voters. Because what we saw with a lot of ballot initiatives since the Roe decision, since Roe was overturned, is that women across the board support abortion access. And it's not just women. The majority of voters support abortion access. And so I think for us, it's really essential to communicate that abortion is on the ballot in many different ways. It can be on the ballot for ballot initiatives, but it's also on the ballot for candidates and candidates up and down the ballot who will protect this right. So we need to stack our state legislatures with pro-choice candidates. We need to make sure we have the House. We need to make sure we have the Senate. And we need to make sure that we have a Democratic pro-choice president. And so communicating that with voters so they know.
Folks, that is Sarah Spain, the Director of Strategic Communications at Emily's List, my special guest for this episode of Sounds Like Change here on The Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. We'll dig in more after these brief messages. What is at stake here in Wisconsin if extremists like Eric Hovde win this November? We'll talk about it with Sarah when we come back here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 2:30 block on a Wednesday, and that means it sounds like change with Emily's List here on The Maggie Dawn Show. My special guest this episode is Sarah Spain, Director of Strategic Communications at Emily's List. We're talking about what's at stake and the importance of young women voters this November. And I think about a place like the state of Wisconsin, where we saw after the Dobbs decision, women's health care sort of thrown into chaos until two, I would call them very brave, Wisconsin judges looked very carefully at our 1859 law, at our 1859 statute, and said, this is actually a statute that bars infanticide, the intentional harming of a woman by another that results in the death of a fetus. That is a different prohibition entirely. Of course, the idea that a law from 1859 enacted before women had the right to vote and before the civil rights movement could strip rights away from half of the population is anathema and sort of gross in its conception. But what are the stakes for Wisconsinites and especially young women in the state of Wisconsin if somebody like Eric Hovde is elected to the Senate, if Donald Trump is given another shot at stacking the federal courts with ultra-conservative, extremist, Christian nationalists, right-wingers?
The reality is a vote for Eric Hovde, a vote for Donald Trump, is a vote for a national abortion ban. We also have to really pay attention to the anti-abortion playbook, which is chipping away at abortion state by state, law by law, with the goal of decimating access across the country. I think we know that if we elect Donald Trump, no state is safe with abortion care. I like to remind folks in California, you know, who think that maybe it's less of an impact, no state is safe when a national abortion ban is a potential if we see Donald Trump in office. And so making sure that we're communicating that across the country a national abortion ban is a possibility, we need to keep Republicans who have made clear that they support this out of office.
It's also why the congressional races here in Wisconsin for the 1st, the 3rd, and the 8th congressional districts, where you have pro-choice Democrats running in the form of Peter Barca, Ms. Cook running against Van Orton, who's a wingnut, and of course, Kristen Lierley, an OBGYN herself, running against Tony Weed. Those elections are important, too. You know, there are some prognosticators that have said it is not out of the realm of possibility that Donald Trump could not only win the White House, but Republicans seize control of both the House and Senate. And if anybody out there is listening and thinks that a national abortion ban would not result from that election outcome, you are fooling yourselves. And the thing, even when I'm talking to very conservative friends of mine who have a religious and moral objection to abortion, what I say to them is, this is not just about reproductive freedom. It's about fundamentally respect for the humanity, the full participatory humanity of women in every element of our society. And you need only look at what people like J.D. Vance have to say about women and the fact that they're not listening to women to know that that position is not just about abortion. It is about denying women their full human dignity to participate in every facet, every bit of American culture on equal footing with men. It is a denial of the respect and, frankly, love that if you are a true Christian is necessary towards every single person without reserve. That is fundamentally what I try to say to people who may have those religious or moral objections. It's not just about that. It's indicative of their approach to people who aren't sort of abiding by the Christian nationalist playbook that women belong in bedrooms and kitchens, and that's about it. Sarah, what can young women in Wisconsin do to make a difference in these last 27 days before the election?
Yes, we have 27 days. It's time to fight. I think we can, millions of things to do, but I think really the focus now, knocking on doors, like making sure you're getting out, you're talking to your neighbors, you're talking to voters, making sure they have a plan to vote, a plan to get out there, making sure you're getting the stakes of this election in front of voters. There are so many opportunities in Wisconsin, as you listed, up and down ballot to really get out there, talk to voters, GOTV. I also think make a plan for yourself to vote. Yes. The stakes of this election are very high, and look up exactly what you need to vote and make sure you have a plan so that you can get out there and vote up and down ballot for folks that are going to protect your reproductive rights.
You can find out information about your registration status, how to register, where to vote, all that good stuff at myvote.wi.gov. Emily's list can be found at www.emilieslist.org, on Twitter at Emily's List, on the gram at Emily's /list. I'll end with this. There's one group of people that's always had complete and total reproductive freedom, and that's rich women. That is fundamentally incompatible with a secular democracy if we're going to impose the religious beliefs of some on half of the population, but, you know, not rich ladies. Because they've always gotten the abortions that they want. Thanks so much, Sarah Spain. Folks, when we come back after these brief messages, it's time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. And I've got nuns on the bus, Sister Alice Gerdman and Sister Quincy Howard, joining me for this very special episode. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.